Last spring wasn't easy, but at least parents didn't have to decide whether to send their kid to school. Now that burden is theirs.
But when it becomes my decision to say, yeah, some of your kids' friends are going to go back to school, but I'm keeping you home, we're headed towards a different kind of rebellion.
That's parent Juliet Lind. I'm Ryan Denham, and this is WGLT's The Leadoff.
Support for WGLT's The Leadoff comes from listeners like you. Join the community of news consumers who listen to this podcast and are willing to support it financially. Contribute at WGLT.org.
It's Wednesday, July 29th. Coming up, what you need to know to start your day. It's The Leadoff from WGLT, Bloomington Normal's public media. Bloomington Normal parents say they're feeling anxious, guilty, and very uncertain as they begin to make decisions about whether to send their kids back to school or keep them home this fall. Unit 5's decision deadline was originally today. It's now been pushed back to August 4th. That's also District 87's deadline. Janice Malik lives in Normal. Her son will be a 6th grader in Unit 5.
All the parents I talk to are just agonizing, and I think everybody is just trying to make the best decision for their own family. And I support everybody and everyone's decision because there is no good decision, I don't think.
Malik says they're leaning toward remote learning. Yes, her son benefits from the social aspects of school, but she doesn't want it on her conscience if he gets sick or gets someone else sick.
They keep telling us that the rates are low in children. Well, maybe they're low in children because they haven't been to school. We don't know.
Leslie Gully of Normal has a 3rd and 1st grader at Sugar Creek Elementary. She's torn. Her kids love school, but Gully also wants to be considerate of teachers who might be safer with fewer kids in the classroom.
But at the same time, I don't want them to stop loving school. I want them to be able to go and enjoy and get all those benefits. And so it's something that we've been kind of a tug that we've been having back and forth ever since the plan came out. And so far we are leaning towards sending them just because they love it so much. But it is sort of a guilt that I carry now because I'm asking their teachers to be at risk for extra students just by sending them.
Other parents don't really have a choice. Tracy McCoy of Normal is a high school English teacher at Ridgeview. Her husband is a school librarian in the Deer Creek Mackinac District. They both need to report to work in August. That means their sons, ages 8 and 6, will be attending school in person too, also at DMAC.
They're just kind of like, we're going to be out there anyways, so I don't know that they're really going to be being exposed to anything that we're not already exposed to.
Unit 5 and District 87 have posted lengthy FAQs on their website about the reopening and promise more information in the days to come. Here's some other stories we're following in the WGLT newsroom. McLean County added 11 new coronavirus cases yesterday, but the testing positivity rate continues to decline. It's now just 2%. That's below the national and rising statewide averages. Election authorities in McLean County plan to mail tens of thousands of vote-by-mail applications to registered voters this week. And Chicago added Missouri, Wisconsin, Nebraska, and North Dakota to the list of states where people who are traveling to the city must quarantine for 2 weeks. Illinois residents must do the same when they travel to New York, New Jersey, or Connecticut. Find more on these stories at WGLT.org. A lot of statues in America have become problematic. People want to tear them down because they represent a part of history to be disavowed or embody once heroic themes that now seem shameful. Charlie Schlenker has more.
A statue of Columbus in Peoria, another of Senator Stephen Douglas at the state capitol in Springfield, a Kickapoo Indian in McLean County that does not represent an accurate understanding of Native Americans. These join similar controversial monuments nationwide. There are Confederate generals galore people want to remove. Even President Teddy Roosevelt, or a statue of Abraham Lincoln in New York that has a kneeling black man in front of him looking upward. They all have something that looks to present-day eyes out of place or objectionable. Bloomington Normal human rights activist Kaya Jai says removing statues of Confederate generals who were traitors to the United States and racist supporters of slavery is an easy call. Other examples are more complex.
I struggle with it as well. It's a polarizing issue. It's where do we draw the line? I mean, Thomas Jefferson, do we venerate him for his prolific writing, or do we scandalize his name for the way he treated Sally Hemings?
Ajayi says more nuanced conversation about other statues needs to happen now and nationwide. He says if the teaching of history in schools were not so timid, it would be easier.
But we are so afraid of being honest about the genocide against the Native Americans We barely touch on the Trail of Tears. We whitewash the Thanksgiving ceremony. We venerate Columbus. Now, these are the ways that you insidiously promote or at least fail to acknowledge some of the racist history that we have.
Others say statues are important. Guy Fraker is a central Illinois attorney, author, and Abraham Lincoln scholar. He says such monuments are a dramatic and graphic way to honor those who are important in the history of the nation.
I don't like destroying anything that's part of history. I haven't really resolved what you should do with those.
Fraker says historical figures we now view as problematic deserve context, not destruction. The image of Senator Stephen Douglas at the state capitol, for instance.
Douglas, was he a good man? No. Was he a bad man? Yes. Was he a racist? Yes. But on the other hand, Douglas was responsible more than any single person for the construction of the railroads, which opened the West. So there was a good side to him, too. And he was the most influential man in our state and then probably in our nation for a long time.
Human rights activist Kaya Jai isn't buying it. Sure, a plaque or other accompanying exhibit to a statue can provide context, but there's often little real rethinking done by society.
When you have a member of a dominant culture who has committed atrocities or oppressed members of a minority culture, there's no movement to recognize the injustice because the injustice was perpetrated by that culture for the purpose of perpetuating that culture.
A prominent historian who's done work on the imagery and significance of monuments and memorials agrees in part. Yale historian Jay Winter says there's an opportunity cost to creating memorials in time and money that is specific.
Until the 1990s, the notion of commemoration had a, what I would say, a highly specific and relatively localized character. You know, they frequently were paid for through local funds, so they became the voice of commemoration of a particular group.
Winter says the internet changed everything. It not only allowed people in one place to see a problematic statue in another, it connected like-minded protesters.
Groups of people in South Africa who got rid of the Cecil Rhodes statue communicate directly with people who don't like a statue of Theodore Roosevelt in New York or of Winston Churchill in London. There's a speed of exchange that has a shared and, in some sense, outraged response.
Winter says regardless of racist, colonialist, genocidal, or some other atrocious aspect of statues involving reconsidered historical figures, there is a commonality, war, an unfailingly masculine celebration of martial tradition.
As long as that is a dominant domain of public remembrance, then I think this problem is going to exist, because over time, various wars will look worse than other ones.
All the people consulted for this story say it's hard to tell when a dominant culture will move enough for a Stephen Douglas, a Christopher Columbus, or a Woodrow Wilson to be thrown down. One Peoria artist, though, says it is the job of present-day artists to offer replacements once that moment does arrive.
I don't have the luxury to do anything else.
African-American and sculptor Preston Jackson says his youthful experience in the South informs his body of work.
Right now, as we speak, I'm building these large pieces of bronzes. You know, I chose bronze for the reason, you know, as a weapon against the fact that there were bronze statues that spoke against, you know.
Jackson says he's now doing a large monument to slaves crossing from Missouri to Illinois as they were pursued in their flight to freedom. Historian Jay Winter says there's no sign the pace of statue protests worldwide will slow down anytime soon.
You can read the rest of this story at WGLT.org. Before we let you go, there's a rally to demand more Black history and literature to be taught in public schools. It begins tonight at 6:30 at Martin Luther King Jr. Park in Normal. Thanks for listening to The Leadoff. Support for this podcast comes from listeners like you. Contribute at WGLT.org.